is Local Talk on KHOI Story City Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area. This is Paul Wearson. My co-host for today is Gina McAndrews. Hi, Gina.
Good morning, Paul. Hey, it's really, I'm really looking forward to co-hosting with you again. A couple weeks ago, I was here with Susan Franzen, and we covered the Skunk River Valley Days in Cambridge, and that was a great event.
Well, today we're going to cover the festival in Collins with Dave Struthers, who's managing the parade there. He'll tell us about the other events where they're doing, including this Friday and Saturday. But before we talk with him, I'd like to give our listeners a preview of other things they'll hear about this hour.
And let's not forget to introduce our great guest we have with us in the studio, Howard Hammond.
Well, Howard Hammond of Slater is an old friend of KHOI and was the one who suggested the road trip to Lake Robbins over in Dallas County, which will be a major part of the program today, along with the story and music of the High Society Big Band, and they will be playing there this coming Sunday evening, and the hours will be 6 to 10 p.m. Welcome to you, Howard.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for the opportunity to be here with you and Gina and be a privileged guest, I'd say.
I have to warn you that Howard is over 70 years of age, but still goes to Lake Robbins every weekend for cutting the rug with friends. And welcome, Howard. Just good to have you back.
Well, thanks a lot. What do you mean by that? You'll have to warn the listeners. I'm not an enemy.
No, you're an old friend. We've actually walked out here. We've worked together out here in the storefront when we were doing fundraising a long time ago. So I remember Howard from those days. And I just think that he's a very, very, very good resource for KHOI and a longtime good friend.
Well, that's an appreciated comment. Thanks, yeah. Paul.
Sure, good to have you, Howard. And then after that, we're going to tune in to agriculture with an introduction to dairy farming. There will be some big surprises there. But now let's get started with Dave Struthers, who is on the line to tell us about what's happening in Collins.
Hello, Dave. Are you there?
I am.
Well, tell us a little bit about Collins, Iowa.
Well, Collins, Iowa is located in the southeast corner of Story County on Highway 65. We are a proud little community of about 450 people. We have our annual Collins Day celebration the fourth weekend in June every year, and that's what's coming up this weekend.
Well, now, how is the best way to get to Collins? If I was coming down Interstate 35, for instance, or up Interstate 35, how would I get to Collins?
Well, if you're on that part of the county, take Highway 30 east. And right there on the southeast side of Colo, Highway 30 intersects with Highway 65, and Highway 65 then just runs south about 8 miles, and you're to the town of Collins. Our parade will be going down Main Street on Saturday morning, and Main Street is just 3 blocks east of the intersection where Highway 65 runs through town. So you can make your way east as you get into town off of 65, and you'll find a spot.
Well, now, Dave, how's the parade coming? You've been planning this for a while. How's it going?
Well, it seems to be going pretty well. I happen to be a leader of a couple of youth organizations, both the church youth group as well as the 4-H club. And the 4-H club was approached several years ago by the Lions Club, who initially started Collins Days, and was asked if the 4-H'ers would help with the parade lineup and registration. And so we did that, and I have a couple young men that will be taking registrations, and by that, all they have to do is get someone to come over to their location on the main street where we'll be set up, and tell us what you have for a parade entry, whether it be a float or a bicycle or a fire truck or a tractor, whatever it may be, car, and they'll give you a corresponding number and get that information transcribed, and just prior to the start of the parade, they will take it down to the announcer truck in downtown Collins, and once the parade starts, then that you'll be announced corresponding to the number on your vehicle.
What time does the parade get underway, Dave?
The parade starts at 10:30 in the morning on Saturday, but that's not the first activity we have in Collins Days. We actually start on Friday evening at 7 o'clock on the south side of Collins, to the west of Highway 65, is the baseball park, and they have a garden tractor pull from Sanction Garden Tractor Pullers. And if you've never seen one of those, these are quite exciting. They're not your lawnmower that you mowed the lawn with yesterday, and now you come to hook it to a weighted transfer sled. These are engines have been highly modified. Many of them have been changed to have engines out of motorcycle engines in a garden tractor. Some of them even have Volkswagen engines, and some of them they look just like the big tractors that pull on the TV or at the state fair, but they're in a small version.
So that's going to be exciting, and that sort of out of the ordinary too. Anything else you want to mention, Dave, before we leave you? Things that are going on, and the name. And we might repeat the name of the festival. I know you said it already, but say it again for everybody.
Yes, it's just the Collins Days, is what it's called, and Saturday is really our big day. We have the parade at 10:30, followed by various kid games. There's lunch at the fire station, prepared by the Friends of the Library, and then the Lions Club has their annual chicken barbecue that night. But there's various games going on downtown, and actually on Saturday we start out with a breakfast, community breakfast at the community center at 7 a.m., and then there is a tractor ride that will be leaving town at 8 and returning around 10:15, and those tractors, if they'd like to, can join right into the parade. But there's no cost for the tractor ride. We're going to take about a 26-mile route to the west and north and come back into Collins, just make a loop, and then there's a prize drawings for the raffles and stuff Saturday evening, and then a dance and a live band after that.
Well, that's a first full slate of events, and I think you're going to have a good crowd at Collins, and I think we really need to take off our hat to people like you, Dave, who take the lead in planning all these festivals. It seems like every town has their summer festival, but you know, it takes some hard work and phone calls. I'm glad to hear that the young people are involved with you in planning the parade, and I know a host of other people are going to make sure all this happens in Collins, Iowa, this coming weekend. It'll be Friday and Saturday. Now, are there events on Sunday, too, Dave?
At Sunday, yes. We wrap up Sunday. We have a community church service at the Collins Christian Church at Maine. We have a gospel group that's going to be singing there, and then they have a bags tournament, and I can't tell you what bags is, but it's evidently a really fun game. That's going to be taking place at the park on the south side of town as well, and that starts, I believe, registration starts at noon, and I believe it starts at 1. So we're basically running from Friday evening through Saturday early to mid-afternoon, and try to cover the whole weekend with different activities for people of various ages and various interests.
Well, thank you, Dave, for being with us. Dave Struthers, good luck this weekend. Everybody go to Collins for the big festival. And, Dave, once again, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, as Gina mentioned, much of today's program touches and focuses on the big band music and a very special ballroom. The High Society Band was one of the groups we featured on our New Year's Eve program when they played for Red Friars. Since most of the band members live in Huxley, we thought that it would be ideal to hear the music group and hear about the local talk show on Wednesday that we planned for today. And when we found they'd be playing at Lake Robbins Ballroom on Sunday, June 28th, well, that settled it. We had to take that long-awaited trip to Lake Robbins and to Huxley to interview the band members. And I remember Lake Robbins because my brother used to mention it, and he went to dances there back in the 40s and 50s. And Howard told us he often attended dances there, too. Now, the usual road trip partner, Susan Franson, was with me on the interviews, but had to leave town last week, so you'll hear her voice occasionally and the effect of her bringing in some of the songs from the first album from High Society Band. Now, we're going to start this morning's trip with the theme song of High Society Band, the High Society Big Band. Their theme song is Leapfroggin'. Well, here we are in the dining room of a lovely home in Huxley, Iowa, overlooking a lovely park with all kinds of trees and
The people who live here are Kathy and Ron Klein. And here we are on our road trip, sitting with them, and we're talking about the High Society Big Band, the duo they're both involved with. Kathy, tell us about your involvement. You're in the band, and this is the High Society Big Band, so we're talking about the sound we all remember. Mention some of those famous names that are associated.
Joy Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Benny Goodman, Stan Kenton.
Oh, yeah, Stan Kenton.
Yeah.
And you play that music, and there's a big venue for this. How often a year does the band go out to play and entertain?
We play between one and two times a month.
And that's not seasonal. Year-round.
Year-round.
And you travel. And I must say that your husband, Ron, here, who looks suspiciously like Steve Spielberg, is the sound man. And Ron, tell me about your role with the High Society Big Band.
I set up sound reinforcement for the vocals, keyboards, and some instruments. And I'm usually there about an hour and a half before we start, making sure we have a space and chairs and table.
So without Ron, you'd be lost. He's the guy that makes sure everything happens and gets set up.
We would be.
And then during the performance, you're manning the mixer for levels and all that sort of thing.
Correct.
So what a marvelous melding of talents here. We have the performer and the technician right in one table. She's also music director, is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
And this Sunday, the 28th of June, you're going to be at the Lake Robbins Ballroom. Tell me about Lake Robbins. We're going to go there on our road trip too today. So just tell us why that's such a terrific place to be.
It's a wonderful ballroom for all kinds of fun 30s and 40s music for everyone to come and dance to. Beautiful dance floor. In fact, it's one of the best in the state.
And it's a trip back down memory lane. And that'll be well attended, isn't it? There's a lot of people who come.
There is.
And Lake Robbins, I think that's been continuously open for decades. And probably that means that Ron will be there. They're starting at 5 this coming Sunday. That means Ron has to be there at 3:30 or something?
Yeah, about 3:30.
Okay. Uh-huh. Now, Ron, how long does it take to set up for one of these concerts? People probably don't appreciate the logistical issues here.
Well, we typically show up at the venue about an hour and a half beforehand to find out how much distance there is from the parking lot into the stage area, which it can vary quite a bit. Sometimes you have to go up and down stairs. And we take with us about 400 pounds of speakers, mixer, amps. It's not a lot, but it's adequate to mic our vocals, our keyboard, and our announcing, things like parts of that. We don't overdo the sound. We just reinforce the sound.
So you would just mic those individuals because the rest of the band sound doesn't need
to
be amplified.
You want original. That's right.
Well, yeah, there's something to be valued there, you know. And when you're sitting there at the console running the show and messing with the dials, and you wouldn't be able to do it without him, right, Kathy?
Oh, we couldn't do it without him.
Think about your answer
sure.
here. He's got to be indispensable.
He is. In fact, that's how our band is so successful. It's because he is.
Now, when you have this date coming up at Lake Robbins, you might tell us what the time is and all that sort of thing. What time are you playing?
In the summertime, it starts at 5 to 9.
Okay, so you're up there and you're going to have to be there an hour and a half before to set up. And they start playing at 5. And boy, you have enough music to fill that time.
We do. Four hours of music.
And it'll be fun at the Lake Robbins Ballroom this Sunday, the 28th of June. So this is going to be the High Society Big Band. And date this for me. When did this band get underway?
Between 1993 and 1994, we had Laurie Pettigo, John Bassard, and a couple other Iowa State professors came down to our community band and asked who would be interested in playing in a big band with them. They had started it a few years back, and they wanted some more players for the band, and so we started playing and practicing at Ballard Creek every other week.
And to join this band, you'd need to audition.
You do have to.
You can't just walk in off the street and say, I want to be part of this great project.
That's correct.
You have to have some musical ability.
Absolutely.
And as music director, what are your duties? What do you have to be responsible for?
Choosing the music that we play. Usually we ask the clientele what type of music they want. And like we play for weddings and anniversaries, and sometimes they want maybe 50s. So we have a little variety there, but mainly the 30s and 40s music.
Is the band membership fairly stable? Are there people that have been there years and years, or comparatively new people, or what?
We do have a lot of new people now. We have a few that have been with us, you know, for a long time, but we do have some new people now.
Well, how long have you personally been in the band?
Since it started.
So you're a founder.
Yeah, correct.
And has the membership stayed about the same? That same number of players?
Yes, we've kept it so that we've kept between 14 and 15 people in the band the whole time.
What's the worst thing that's ever happened on a road trip?
Our drummer did not show up for the performance, so the vocalist had to use a tambourine to keep the beat going.
Well, you probably invented a new genre of music, the tambourine jazz or something like that. But, you know, it's nice to have people who can think on their feet and do things that need to be done for a given performance. But I know that you enjoy doing this, and also I'm interested to find out, too, as you've told us, that there's a different clientele with a lot of these venues. So you have to make the music choices based on that, don't you?
That's correct, yeah. The show Dancing with the Stars has kept some of the young people too interested in this type of music.
I think the greatest asset to this kind of music is the modern high school band that almost always features a jazz band. I went to a middle school concert up in Roland, and this boy was in the jazz band part of it, and he was wearing a fedora hat, you know. He's a 12-year-old, maybe 13-year-old. I said, you know, you look like Frank Sinatra. Who's Frank Sinatra? And so, obviously, you know, these things are part of our culture that we hope we can pass on. And I had the experience of being with young people when they're exposed to this. And the response is, wow, you know. Their concept might be that music is a small band with guitar, keyboard, and percussion. And this is sort of new to them, unless they were in instrumental music. And I think that's very good right now. We have all these jazz bands here. The Roland Story has a big jazz band that's been very successful. All surrounding schools have a jazz band. My theory is that this is the way this music will be preserved. That these young people learn this. And that's how it's going to happen. And then hopefully, like you folks, they will continue to do that and find a venue and a group, or even found one, where this music is still played, because there's still an audience. Well, the interview with Kathy and Ron of the High Society Big Band closed with what they tell me is their most requested song, In the Mood. And Howard, I believe the hours we need to correct on that. We talked in the interview about the band starting to play at 5. This Sunday, the 28th, it'll be 6 to 10. Is that correct, Howard?
Righto. There's a little switching going on there by the management so they can accommodate depending upon the summer or the winter hours. That's the little switch. So it is. You're right, Paul. 6 to 10 coming up.
So if you came at 5, you just have to hang around the parking lot?
Oh, but that's not a bad deal because they have food there.
They do have.
Oh, yeah.
You could just eat. So
dine and dance, man.
It's not too crucial. If you come there at 5, you're going to have something to do and something to eat.
Correct.
Yes.
And you can dance it off.
You're right. Mix and mingle and dance it off. You got it, Gina. Right.
And Howard's there almost every week we hear.
Righto.
It's a good way to stay in shape.
Correct.
Well, that should really put us in the mood for the next interview you and Susan recorded at Robin's Ballroom in the court field just west of Woodward. And talk about the Field of Dreams. I've been down there a couple of times myself, and it's almost unbelievable that such a fabulous ballroom is a little challenging to find, but you can find it. And people have been doing so since 1931. You'll have to give the directions later in the program so that when people are ready with their papers and pencils, we can.
Yeah, they better be ready because that thing, Lake Robbins is like a mirage in the middle of a desert. It pops up in the middle of the cornfields. And by now, let's hear why you might want to go there.
Right out in the middle of farm country, and it just pops up on you when you come over the hill. In a surprising place, it's a low-slung building with sort of a dome.
But I really think we ought to invite our listeners to imagine this beautiful landscape we're looking at. We're standing in front of the entrance, and there are fields really green. Of course, it's been raining a lot, so everything is just green and beautiful. Is that corn over there?
Yeah, it's got to be corn. The main thing here is they did groom and mow all the grass around the driveway, but until you get to this area, it's strictly farm to market roads and farmsteads, and so this pops up on you as a real surprise. Everything is like it has been forever. It's one of those things that eludes the passage of time, because I think if you drove in here in 1940, it would be the same scene.
Well, let's get in and meet Lynn.
Oh, thank you. Let me get some lights on.
Oh, what a beautiful place. Looks like they're ready to have Ron set up the equipment.
Well, Lynn, what's the date on this building?
They opened up on November 11th, 1931.
Veterans Day, 1931.
Armistice Day. It wasn't Veterans Day then. It was Armistice Day.
That's right. Here's a stage right behind you,
yeah.
And that front's a ballroom with these excellent floors.
Yeah, that's the original dance floor.
It is.
Yeah, it's like a hard white pine, when pine was really hard.
Yes, yeah.
And it's never been replaced.
And the dance floor is fronted by the stage, and right off stage you have your bar, and then there are tables grouped all around the dance floor. And they're placed so that everybody has a good view of what's going on out there. It's actually an arena all the way around. You have seating and tables. What's your capacity here?
We can seat over 1,000. Or
really?
Not seat over 1,000. We can have 1,000 people in here. Right now, the way it's sitting, we can seat about 400 people around the dance floor. The dance floor is 60 by 80. And there is a second bar over there. That was the original bar.
Is that right?
Yeah, and originally this was all dance floor, 10,000 square feet of dance floor. No seating, there was benches around the edges. And behind those sliding doors is another room that was the original bar that sat 200 feet south of the building.
Really?
And so you would go out and drink, and if you wanted to dance, then you came over to this building and you paid to get in to dance.
What's the background of this in terms of who created this property this way? Was there a family, a founding family?
Yeah, the farmer owned this land, and there was kind of a natural pond here. And he started in the early 20s, or I'd say by the 20s, he had a man-made lake. And he started putting cabins around it. And the interurban out of Des Moines runs right by here. And so people would come out and camp in these cabins and go on the lake. There's a photo over there. There's a picture. He put an eight-sided cabin on this lake with a boardwalk. And this was in the early 20s. And then by 29, he started building the ballroom. And his name was Robbins. And, you know, you'd think 29, the Depression and stuff, but see, the Midwest didn't get hit as soon. And he was very wealthy. He, you know, he raised cattle and took them to Omaha and was the rendering guy. And
what was his first name?
Riley.
Riley Robbins.
Yeah.
And what you have to call Riley is a visionary.
Yeah.
Who could come up with this concept? If you had a lake, most people would say, well, maybe we can put some cabins around it. But he went way beyond that. Now, the interurban, that was actually a railway, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so people paid a nickel or whatever. And so that's what really brought access in from outside this rural area.
Well, and actually, though, the local people at that time, you know, back then in the 30s, you didn't go very far. And so local people supported it real well.
So it was actually the local people, plus whoever came in on the interurban.
Yeah.
And then they would come out here. And we're talking now, you know, the Prohibition era didn't end till 1933.
Okay.
So there must have been interesting happenings here.
Oh, I've heard some stories.
I bet you have, of the bootleggers and all
that.
Original bar.
Yeah, and it actually was in that side room. And then when they didn't let you dance and drink on the same floor. So that was the idea of the bar.
Well, they didn't want to have drinks spilled all over the floor.
No, I think it was a law.
Oh,
it was probably one of the.
And if you go to the Valet, you step down.
Yeah.
Surf ballroom, you step down onto the floor. You could not.
They were called blue laws, and they were laws that govern behavior, especially with regard to drinking. And what you have here is a place that dates back to the era of the big bands and the traveling people who actually rode in tour buses and played ballrooms all over the country. What are some of the groups that have played here?
I think almost all of them.
All the old
I'm going through the newspaper now because where they advertise. That big sign up there, that big square sign in the entranceway, is the original ad for the opening night.
Really?
And I blew it up.
Good.
From a little clipping. I kept blowing it up. The only thing is we need to put a burst on there or something. Because Dorothy L'Amour was the female singer of that band.
She was.
And she was like 17 or 18 years old.
Really?
And that was in 1931. And by 35, she was making movies. She actually married the band, Herbie Kay, and they went to Hollywood. And I think he didn't get one movie that he played in. And I'm trying to find that.
Well, you talk about big bands, and we learned also that Les Brown and his Band of Renown, I understand this was one of the last dates he ever played.
He played one more date after this one. And it was really funny because people were saying, well, hope he makes it. And I didn't realize how true that was, that was a possibility, you know.
Because he was advanced in age by that time.
Yes, yeah. But his son had taken over the band. And his son was with him that night, you know. His son had been with him quite a few years.
Well, you think of Glenn Miller, maybe Harry James. These people were people who, you know, we lose track of the fact that television revolutionized things so much. Before that kind of mass media, you became famous by playing everywhere. So it wasn't unusual for bands to play that are very well known in very obscure places. It was part of the life, you know, like vaudeville almost.
And it wasn't like, okay, every Friday or Saturday night we're gonna have a dance. It was like when the band was coming through, they'd throw an ad in the paper and say Wednesday night.
So it couldn't, not necessarily a weekend.
No, it was just, you know, whenever they were coming through and stuff.
Date that for me. When you bought the ballroom, what was the date that you did that?
I bought it in 93, October 93.
And the previous owner, had they been involved for a long period of time?
Yeah, she had married the owner. The original owners were Robbins, and they had it. Nobody can seem to pinpoint it exactly, but they'd had it for the first few years, and then they kind of leased it out to the Best family. And then, you know, the war came in, and people in and out of the war, the family, you know, and stuff. And so Pete Best ended up having the ballroom and running it, and then he actually bought it. Then Wilma, his wife, was 20 years younger than him, so he'd been running it for a while, and then she married him in 44. And then they actually bought it in 46. And so he'd probably had it anywhere from 5 to 10 years before she got involved. And she was here 50 years and I bought it.
So that's the owner prior to you.
I'm the third owner.
And on June 28th, we have the High Society Big Band playing. And they're going to be playing Glenn Miller and all that stuff. And I'm just thinking how often this wood has heard some of those songs.
Oh, wow, a lot.
If the walls could talk, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the most impressive thing is, number one, the original floor and the original bar, and then all the modifications that have been made, the location of the stage and everything, the second bar.
Yeah.
This is all an improvement.
Well, that's the original stage where it was.
Was that the original stage?
Yeah. Well, it's been...
That was always located.
It's been
there.
Repaired. It was always located. I could say it's been repaired.
And now the main entrance is...
Straight through those lights. You know, going through those lights, there's a little hallway.
Wasn't there a lady who took tickets here for years? Tell me a little about her.
She was here opening night. She didn't work opening night, but she worked the next night they were open. And she was probably 23, I believe. And she started taking tickets, and I kind of inherited her. And at first, I thought I could just... replace her, you know. Well, it didn't take me long to realize how valuable she was and how honest she was. She was a teacher for 20 years, and then she worked in the bank for 20 years, and then she always worked out here. And so, and we're actually trying to get her in the Guinness World Book of Record of being the longest working person at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not, nobody's broken the record yet. She was, you know, we've got her down for 81 3/4 years.
Well, she's her own
and
category.
So we just have to get them to acknowledge it, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
We know she's the longest working person, you know, but, you know, to submit it and get them to officially prove it.
I would regard her as a very stable person.
Yeah, honest as the day.
Well, the reason I brought her up is because I saw a television feature on her. She was interviewed as this person
about,
who had been here for
5 times.
It was a delightful interview, and you could tell there was a labor of love for her forever.
Yeah.
And that she was as tied to this place as the floor is. You know?
Yeah. And we lost her last summer, the end of June. So that was a hard. She was 105 years old.
Well, let's go back to the decision-making process for you. Now, how did you come to know about and decide to buy this place?
I started working here part-time as a waitress and a bartender. And I actually worked here about 6 years. And I went back to school. And the joke was, I'm getting educated so I don't have to work this hard. But, you know, you just fell in love with it. So when we were kids, my dad followed Lawrence Welk around. He loved Lawrence Welk. And so he'd dance with us on his feet, you know, in the living room and stuff. And so when I started working here, I just fell in love with the ballroom. And I went back to school and got educated, and I was a graphic artist. And I went out east for about 10 years. And I was always looking for a ballroom out there, and they don't have them out there. We went to the Roseland in New York, you know, and stuff.
Oh, that's still there.
Well, but they've closed it down.
They closed the Roseland?
They officially closed it down this summer, this year.
I'm sorry
about
to hear
broke
that.
My heart.
Yeah. And then finally, something precipitated your return.
Well, I wanted to keep, you know, I kept, like I said, the longer I was out there, the more I wanted to come back. And my kids had grown up, and they were going to college back here and stuff, and so why not come back home, you know?
So your kids were back here in the Midwest.
Well, they were out in Connecticut, but they came back to go to college here. Because they, you know, we all miss the Midwest. So I came out here, my nephew was getting married, and I came out here, and my older brother said, remember when you worked out here and you and Judy wanted to buy this? And I said, yeah. I said, why don't you do that? I had been applying for jobs with that flood came in 93.
Yeah.
And everybody that was going to hire me wasn't hiring. And so I was looking for something else that I could do. And I said, well, I could probably do that. And so I went and talked to her, and it happened.
And you got the necessary financing and so on.
Yeah.
And you have no regrets looking back. That was a good thing to do.
Yeah, I think so.
This is Local Talk, KHOI Radio, Community Radio, Ames, Story City and surrounding area. And you're on a road trip to Lake Robbins, recorded by Susan Franson and me, Paul Wearson. And we've been talking with Lynn Paschal Wilkinson about the origins of the ballroom, its history up to the present. Our next section has to do with the future of big band music and ballrooms. And, well, is this the end of an era? Or are there ways to bring coming generations to the pleasure of ballroom dancing in the atmosphere of the dance halls? Are you open here?
Just the weekends. Mostly Saturday, always Sundays, and always Saturdays unless I have a wedding, then I'm close to a private wedding or party.
Well, you probably have some private events booked too, don't
you?
I would say this would be a great place to have a wedding reception.
Yeah, I do quite a few
class
weddings.
Reunion.
Yeah.
Prom. It's already decorated.
Yeah, yeah.
The main thing is, you know, when we look at the ceiling, there are all these chains of lights, and there's a great big sort of centerpiece out here to dance under, and just a wonderful arrangement of what we would think of as Christmas tree lights, but they are arranged so that they really accent the cross beams and the define the dance floor. And then we have the little globes that are different colors, and it's just a piece of Americana. And I think it's so marvelous that you have kept this going, because the issue always is, at what point is the line broken, you know?
Yeah.
And so this dates back to the 20s. And it's so wonderful that someone, I regard you as young, see? It's just a marvelous, almost providence that you've come stepped up to do this and that you haven't tired of it. Well, the people, isn't that what keeps you coming
back? Yeah, and the people
back?
Are really wonderful. I mean, and if people would come out on Sunday night, the big band is my favorite.
Yeah.
And if the younger generation would come out and capture that magic that they have, I mean, they don't have to drink to dance. And I mean, you know, we sell drinks, but if I'd live off the bars, I'd be dead.
Now,
I mean,
you,
I'd be broke.
You serve food, too.
And we serve food. And nothing spectacular, but just good home-cooked food and stuff. And
Well, that's now on Sunday night. What's the crowd that comes? Describe the folks who...
They're older, retired. Most of them are retired. Now, we will see some young people that mm-hmm. like ballroom, but it's mostly the older ones, and anywhere from 60 up to... I mean, we got people almost turning 100. I mean, we've had 100-year-old people in here. And
they all have that lilt of the step, and they do the dip and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we were supposed to meet Howard Hammond here. I bet he must be a regular, is he?
Yes, he is. And he is really a promoter, and he's a single gentleman, so he goes, and there's a couple of them that if there's some single ladies come, they're very nice, polite gentlemen, and ask them to dance. So you can pretty much get some dancing done. You're not going to sit here all night and watch everybody else dance. And they make sure everybody gets to dance. And they're just a nice group of people, very loyal and very supportive.
So you're open on weekends, Saturday night also.
Yes, and we do rock and roll and country western if we're not doing a private party.
They would be big draws too, right along with big bands, especially country and western.
Yeah. Well, now we're not like a drinking bar, so to speak. I mean, you can come out and drink, and I have some bands that might pull more drinkers, like the Pony Express. You know, you'll see more drinking done there. But most of all, most of dancers don't really drink that much. They're out here to dance. So what we're selling is dancing. We're not selling the drink and the food so much.
I bet that's a real separator.
It is.
If you drink, dancing becomes dangerous. That's probably a self-defined line.
And there's a lot of good bands out there, and some of the bands don't realize it, but you can be a very good band, but not a dance band, but a drinking band. And so it's the way, you know, the beat, and the dancers are very critical of their bands. And so, you know, we don't hire every country western band that comes along because if they can't keep the rhythm or the beat right, or, you know, if they fluctuate too much or something, they're not a dance band.
So these are connoisseurs of bands, and you got to be careful because they have to meet certain standards.
Yeah. In the fall and winter, we get a lot of college kids, high school kids. This is about the only place they can come in and dance. You know, they're not allowed in most bars most places.
Yeah.
And so we can allow them to come in because we serve food and our rules.
So the parents of people who are in their teens around here, they wouldn't bat an eye if their kids were dancing at Lake Robbins.
No, and when parents call, when I had a set of parents call me, they said, we just found out our daughter, she's 16, was out to your place. And you serve beer and stuff. And I said, yes, we do. And I said, and I don't blame you. I'd be calling, too, if that was my daughter. I said, we'd welcome you to come out and check us out. And I said, I know exactly what table she was sitting at because I said, you know, we knew they were young.
Yeah.
They didn't even try to get a beer. They didn't want a beer. They just wanted to dance. I said, but as parents, I would come and check the place out myself.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Did they?
I don't know if they ever did or not.
Well, you must have been so convincing they didn't find it necessary.
Well, maybe. I don't know. But I understand where they're coming from because I would be concerned if I knew my daughter was getting into a place that served alcohol. And you know, and I'm not saying that someone hasn't slipped a minor a drink or something, you know, and we try real hard to watch that, but we really don't have a lot of issues with it. More with weddings or benefits or something like that. But our normal dances... The kids just want to dance. And of course, we check IDs and stuff like everybody does, and if we question it. And I'll even walk through, and if I see someone young, and I think everybody's young, I'll ID them. And they say, well, we checked at the bar, and I said, that's okay, we're checking again, you know.
Do you see Des Moines people up here?
Yeah, Ames, Newton, Nevada, Marshalltown, Fort Dodge, Jefferson, you know, Greenfield, Story City. I've got a couple that's north of Story City. Real regulars every Sunday night.
Really?
And their car is in the garage. And so when the weather started getting bad, they would just get in their car and drive out. Now, you know, not listening to the news. So I finally got their phone number. And so I call them if we're going to. They came down one time, we canceled. They weren't so bad up there, but down here it was. And we canceled. And I said, you don't need to be out in that, you know.
You know, I'm thinking of the CBS News, and they always end with a segment that's from the heart, you know. Steve Hart, I think, is a reporter, and he's taken over the role of Charles Kuralt on the road, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking this would be a great location for CBS News to do an on-the-road segment because it's such a piece of Americana, and it's so untouched and so true and so vintage that it would, to a producer in New York City, it would look like the best find around. Well, I'm just thinking of the millions of shoes that have shuffled across this floor. And it's just one of those things that crosses so many different eras of our history. The 30s, World War II, the 50s, all the changes up to the 21st century, and you're still here, all lit up, and it's still a place where people can
but
come.
But ballroom right now is really struggling because we're losing those people. So we're that's why I want to get into the exercising bit. Hopefully that people will want to come out and exercise. And we're talking about trying to do a Friday night just as a supper night to give more exposure so maybe people get comfortable, they'll come back and dance.
Yeah, what I would do is exactly that, attack it from the standpoint of food, and having an event here. And then the things that augur for you are the, number one, we were talking about this too with the folks from the band, the number of kids, teenagers in Iowa who play in jazz bands.
Yes.
And they are accumulating an interest in this kind of music that's apart from just guitar, well, the rock setup, you know.
Right.
And so basically, you have that. And then Dancing with the Stars, even though people may not try to emulate that, the idea of dancing is there. And there have to be people who still make a living doing ballroom
teaching.
Dancing instruction.
They say that the dance classes just really boomed after that started.
And I think that, remember Arthur Murray? They taught people to dance.
Yeah.
The Arthur Murray Studio.
Yeah.
There used to be one on Hickman Road, I remember,
there's
for
two
years.
Or three dance studios in Des Moines still.
And I just think that, one thing they could do is come out here on graduation night.
Yeah.
And meld with the crowd.
Yeah.
And just have them, these are our newest ballroom dancers.
And the Des Moines Dance Studio, maybe two or three times a year, they'll bring their class out and they'll put on a demo, like during break time, and demonstrate, which is fun. And Mad Hat came out and did a competition one time, and that was fun to watch and stuff.
But then you have the wedding receptions, the proms.
Yeah.
And those special occasion things, that's going to help the scene. I'm just looking for things that will sustain this into the coming years, you know.
Yeah, Pony Express comes out every, I don't know if you know much about Pony Express, but they do their annual dance out here, and it's always Easter weekend.
Oh, with Easter suit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
well,
and I think over 35
Rolf Carlson,
years, they have raised over $9 million for that.
I would say there are very few surviving ballrooms in Iowa.
I'm the only one that is doing ballroom dancing every week.
That's right. Huh?
Surf Ballroom does it six times a year.
Well, and I know the Val Air Ballroom in West Des Moines, that's a different venue now. There's a lot more Latin American music.
Yeah,
and all
they
that
don't
stuff.
Even do ballroom. Yeah. They were on their anniversary doing it one night a year, but I don't even know if they're doing that anymore.
Well, we talked a little bit about this with the folks we interviewed from the High Society Big Band, and then we're talking about the Dancing with the Stars show might create a revival of this interest in ballroom dancing.
And I think it has caused an interest, but that is so flamboyant. You know, that is so, it almost intimidates a lot of people.
Well, they're very good.
Yeah, well, and it's just like, I can't do that, you know, so they don't even try. We're trying to get connected with, I was trying to get healthy for life. Iowa wants to be one of the top healthiest. Yeah. Well, you know, they've got marathons for running and walking and bicycling and stuff. Well, dancing is one of the best exercises. And it's ballroom dancing that is supposed to be the best.
How about reviving the dance marathon from
the
20s?
That's what we're trying
to do. Put the placards on the back and see who drops.
and that's what, you know, I've been checking into trying to get connected with that. And I think that's what we have to do is have a marathon. And expose us, and if people, I mean, a lot of people don't want to go to the gym, a lot of people can't ride bicycles, and I don't want to jog, I can't, I'm too old to jog. So dancing, you're out there having fun, you don't even realize. And then I had a lady put a pedometer on Sunday night, and she danced almost every dance, and she'd go 5 miles a night.
5 miles.
And she says, I have fun every step of the way.
And you yourself can get down to Lake Robbins, and you can get there with directions found at the website lakerobbins.com. And here are the directions as well. Out in the middle of the cornfield, 2 miles south and 2 miles west of Woodward, 1 mile south on 141 from the north side, a little over 2 miles west of Highway 141 from the east side.
Well, now, we're going to give our version of Tuning Into Agriculture. This is a new feature of Local Talk on Wednesday, and we had hoped to talk with Jill Burghardt and the Picket Fence Creamery folks. And the Picket Fence Creamery is about 2 miles from Lake Robbins Ballroom, but we couldn't schedule it. We'll feature it soon, but today we're deciding to give a picture of the dairy industry as we remember it from our own childhoods. We have Howard here and Gina. All three of us grew up on farms and had the chores of most farm kids in the past. We milked the cows, and we'll tell you what it was like and how we watched it change. Thing about the farming was, Howard, you're 80-plus. You must remember a lot about the farms in those days.
Well, I was kind of shanghaied into being a farmer. When I was a sophomore in high school, my dad read this Sunday paper and said, they're selling a Guernsey milking cow up the road here about 5-10 miles. I think it's because we got this old dairy barn on our property. Maybe we ought to go check it out. Well, it ended up having the Guernsey cow in the barn, and Dad said, well, it's yours. Get started. That's how my farming started, and before I got done, I had 2 milk cows and 2 calves and 200 chickens. Didn't want to be a farmer, but Dad pushed me into it.
So it was like osmosis. It crept into your life just like syrup coming off the table or something.
Correcto. I had to mix it in with my athletic. I remember Dad didn't want to milk the cows much. He sent me to do it, and I remember milking the cows once in my baseball uniform because I had to hurry back to a ball game.
Wow. And Gina, tell me about your days on the farm. You grew up on a farm, too.
Well, I was the oldest in our family, and I always loved being outdoors and had a horse when I was 2, and so kind of been on the go ever since, and he ended up driving tractors and trucks when I was 7-8 years old and falling off horses and chasing cows and milked a few cows during my high school years. And over the years after that, when I lived in Australia for 6 months on the outback, and we had a milk cow out there because there wasn't any stores or anything for 4 or 5 hours drive. So,
wow, that's exciting. What brought you down there? Wow.
Oh, just bought a ticket and went on a trip for a couple of years.
Just that's right.
And picked up jobs along the way and paid my bills.
You are an adventurer. Yeah, well, I remember the farm, in the early 50s, there seemed to be sort of a change-up. My father was born in 1904 and moved to our current farm where I live now. I moved back to my farm I grew up on, and we milked 11 cows. And then somewhere in the early 50s, the economy of scale of dairy farming changed. Now, across the road was Marshall Thompson, the hardest working man I've ever seen. He baled hay all summer because he had 40 cows. And, that's how big you had to be then. And my dad quit milking in the early 50s, right around 52, 53 probably. And then you had to have 40 cows or more to make it. And Dad just switched then to beef cattle and hogs and that sort of thing and grain farming. And we still have the cream house. That's where I put all my garden stuff now, But across the way, Marshall had 40 dairy cows. And then somewhere after that, maybe the 60s or 70s, I don't know when, there was a leapfrog. And how many cows do you have to have now, Howard, to have a dairy farm? 500 or something?
You'd have to check with the dairy people at Iowa State University, I think, to know for sure.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of them out there now with 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 cows.
I've heard that. It's just amazing the economy of scale in farming, along with the increased number of acres that people are farming. You have everything, just like a poker game. Call you in, raise you one, raise you two.
Well, turns out that I guess I have to admit that I was a short-time farmer in Milker. I started, you mentioned years here in age. I was 1946 to 1948 when I had my cows. I was in high school at the time. And as you mentioned, dairy herds began to get larger. So a nearby farmer was in the sales activity for dairy cattle. And he said, Howard, you ought to go ahead and keep buying and get yourself into a big dairy. And I said, no. I'm selling my cows and going to college, which I did. But before I left, it's a good thing I did, because right about that time, the pasteurization law came in. I was selling raw milk My mom helped me bottle two neighbors, and it turned out that pasteurization law came in, and I didn't have any money to buy pasteurization equipment. And then after that came homogenization. Mm-hmm. So as the dairy industry grew over the years, I think I'm glad I got out when I did.
Yeah, Dad was glad to get out of that, too, because it tied you down. You know, morning and night, you had to milk those cows. And they were insistent. You know, if you were delayed and you drove back to the farm place, you'd hear this painful mooing, you know. They wanted to get in and be milked because they were in pain. And any farmer who wasn't willing to get up early and stay up late with calving and all that sort of thing, it was a livestock just as a labor-intensive way to farm anyway. There are very few people in livestock anymore.
You got that right. Let's have some admission here. How many times when you were hand-milking did you have the cow put her foot in your bucket?
Oh, yes. And the tail swishing in your face.
Oh, it's sitting there in a three-legged stool and then trying to trap her tail between your leg and the bucket. And they talk about cleanliness of milk.
And you know, our cows listen to the radio, and they listen to WHO, Herb Plambeck, and all these people.
Did they ever start dancing?
Well, they sort of shift from side to side.
Is that how it was? Okay.
But you know, our cousin came in from California, and he turned the station to jazz, you know.
Uh-oh.
Oh, there was unrest among the dairy cattle. They were unhappy because they were hooked on the farm show on WHO.
Yep.
So Dad had to turn it back to WHO, or they would have been a riot there. I forgot what creatures of habit dairy cows are. They even had their own radio show that they loved to listen to, you know.
Did you ever have to hurry? And maybe a lot of people don't know. I don't know how the milking machines work today, but when I got in there, as I mentioned, one time with my baseball uniform, I had to get that cow milk and get the heck out back to coach, and the cow wouldn't let her milk down.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be kind to them as you deal with their udder and work with them to get them, let the milk down so you can go for it.
Yeah, the tender touch. And, you know, my dad used to squirt the milk right out of the udder, and the cats would line up on the gutter in the back with their mouths open.
You had to be a good shot.
Yeah, and they would drink it right out of the air. I thought, this is marvelous. It looks like a circus out there.
If we had a movie of that, I think we could sell it today.
No one would believe it, but it's true. You could squirt milk right into the mouth of a cat 5 feet away. No, it's really great to reminisce about farming, and what I picked up from you, Gina, and from you, Howard, is that at very tender ages, we were operating heavy equipment, weren't we? Pickup trucks.
10-4.
And, you know, I drove a tractor at the age of 8. A lot of people drove vehicles of various kinds, pickup trucks and everything, long before adolescence. It was just something that, like when I took driver's education, that was like review, you know, because we've been doing it so long. Well, I'll tell you what. This has been fun today, and it's been Local Talk on KHOI Radio. Your hosts today have been Gina McAndrews and myself, Paul Wearson, along with guest Dave Struthers of Collins. Howard Hammond is really a co-host today. Howard's from Slater. Kathy and Ron Klein of Huxley and the High Society Big Band. And Lynn Pichelle Wilkinson from Lake Robbins Ballroom near Minburn. Reporter Susan Franson recorded our road trip to Lake Robbins Ballroom. The show was engineered by Richard Morrison. And music you heard were classic songs from the first CD of the High Society Big Band, Leapfroggin', their theme song, In the Mood, Sentimental Journey, and The Lovely Begin the Begin. Also, the theme from The Happy Farmer by Robert Schumann. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Now, this show, like all local talk shows, is streaming live as well as on your radio dial at 89.1 FM. As listener and contributor, you keep us on the air. Comments and contributions may be sent to khoifm.org or at the Pantorium at 410 Douglas Avenue, 5010 in Ames. And remember, Lake Robbins Ballroom, you can go to their website, www.lakerobbins.com. And remember, June 28th, this Sunday, the High Society Big Band, playing from 6 to 10, and Howard's going to be there.
You bet I will.
Yes, and thank you all. And see you again on the radio.